Are we on? Okay. So, can you all hear me? Yeah. It's not new news to me or to anybody else, but this evening as I was sitting, I realized again, and maybe more profoundly, how very, very radical a thing we do when we come here. Or when we sit down and are still and silent for any extended period of time. There's no act that is more radical than doing this. It seems to cut across everything that we are conditioned to be preoccupied with from morning to night and even when we're asleep. Activity, stimulation, listening, talking, striving, getting everything done that's on our list and our schedule. For myself, compulsively being on time. Even if it's half an hour early. So what is it that is motorizing this striving that drives us and compels us and keeps us from being free and being in touch with a simple act of simply being? Not even being ourselves, just being. So in the Buddhist tradition, it's said that it's sensory input and then the mental formations that accumulate as a result of our interpreting what we experience through our five senses. And the conditioning and the education that we get from family and society, schools, telling us what our senses are, what our sensory experience means, what to do with it, how to build on it, how to proceed being successfully ourselves. And successfully engaged in community, in society. And it seems that the upshot of it is to never, never be able to rest. So I like to think of this as radical resting. Of course, we don't rest immediately when we come to the position of being still and quiet, because we're still reverberating with everything that we have been so passionately or dispassionately chasing, involved with, building a sense of ourselves, relating to other people based on how we see them, how they want to be seen. It's all a very intricate game that is really delusional. It's like icing on the cake and never eating the cake. So we come back home whenever we take the opportunity, and I'm always amazed at all the wisdom that is in this room, because it takes wisdom to elect to spend time being quiet and still, because it is such a radical inactivity. When we come to this place, the first thing we encounter is all the agitation that we have been involved with and eating and drinking through our senses, our five senses, voraciously, from morning to night, day after day, week after week, from the beginning of our lives to the end of our lives. And it takes time for all that turbulence to calm down. And we feel it in our minds, agitated thinking, planning, what am I going to wear tomorrow? Did I call so-and-so back? What did he really mean when he emailed me this? And our bodies, feeling the holding of all that agitation and concern and stress in our bodies, the rigidity, the pain, the heat, the cold, the numbness. And the desire to do something about how we find our minds and our bodies. Maybe if we move, things will be better. Maybe if we keep chewing on this one thought, this narrative that has been going on all day in my mind, maybe I can finally succeed in unlocking the riddle, in resolving it. So even though our senses are open and available to everything that is out there, they still chase experience, sensory data. Our minds chase ideas, chase occupation and preoccupation. So it's been interesting for me. I, 2 weekends ago, took a break, not to arouse envy in anybody. It's been the first time in years that I got away, and it was just a weekend. And it was on the glorious California Central Coast. And I indulged myself and my cousin in a 75-minute massage at Esalen. If you buy a massage at Esalen, you can stay in a hot tub before and after and even have a meal. And I wanted a deep massage, not Rolfing, but I wanted a deep, deep, deep massage. And it's really a wonderful place because you can hear the ocean breathing. The massages are right up against the big surf. And all the weight of his hand and his thumbs on my flesh, if I allowed my breathing to be in synchronicity with the ocean breathing, I could breathe and let the pressure of the thumbs and the fingers go right through my flesh. And the result of it was, when I came home, my mind, I couldn't help but notice, was unmoving for 3 whole days. Unmoving. So I could sit down in my living room and just be. I don't know if you've ever had that kind of experience, but it is delicious. It's so peaceful. Everything got done. I returned all the calls. I addressed all the emails. I was on time for all of my sessions at work. I even gave a 2-hour workshop in the city and planned it out. So the surprise for all of us sometimes is understanding that we can continue to function in a relaxed state. We won't skip a beat. I know there's times when I, you know, give these workshops to people in their work environments, and they're shocked when I say, all you need to do is stop. You will be more effective. You will be more efficient. You will cover more bases if you just stop. And people freak out. They feel, well, if I stop, I'm going to become helpless. You know, life will run over me. I'll forget what I'm supposed to do. Not realizing that everything that we have learned from the moment we were born and before is all registered, operational, and functioning. We don't have to remind ourselves of what we already know or worry about whether we know it enough continually, endlessly, and obsessively in order to be competent, beyond competent, masterful. Because when we stop, we're not expending energy on obsessive, compulsive thoughts and behaviors. So we're conserving our energy for being precisely in the moment and having all of the experience and knowledge of our experience applied in that moment. And have energy for the next moment too. There is something divine and miraculous about being able to just let ourselves be. Not picking, did I do this right? Is this something that I'll never, never let go of? I've always, always had this problem. You know, the things that go on that stress us, the things that move us forward. And it's like an engine that creates anxiety, actually. At first, it might be enthusiasm or excitement. But after a while, it turns into being anxious. Are we okay? Is it all going to work out? Is the sun going to rise on me tomorrow? And anxiety has a way of resolving into underlying chronic stress. We're not even aware anymore of how tight we are, how agitated, how much we push ourselves and everybody around us, how much we communicate that anxiety beyond our skin sac. And how much we need to persistently move. So, here we are, inviting stillness and silence to do its medicine. It's not really tranquility, it's ease. It's different. We become easeful. We become expansive. We become closer to who we really essentially are when we stop and do nothing. It's completely radical, extreme. I like to think of meditation as the extreme sport of all time. We can rest and relax in the position. Let ourselves be exactly how we find ourselves from moment to moment. Whatever we're feeling, wherever our body is, we don't have to agitate, we don't have to redirect, we just expand and receive what is true in the moment. And that changes it. That the contact of awareness with what is true has an effect on our mind and body process. So it was quite stunning for me to be able to spend time experiencing my mind not moving, not agitating, like the surface of the ocean without any waves. And I found myself on the fourth day a little attached to it because I noticed I was starting to think again. Things were rolling back into place. And I said, now just don't be too attached. Just let go. And because of the contrast from quiet, non-moving mind to mind beginning to do its conditioned, tracings, I was more capable of saying, oh, there's that thought, I can just let it go. There's that feeling, I can just let it be. So it's such an extraordinary freedom, liberation, to watch thoughts arise, to watch the narrative turbulence begin to roil, and to say, I know where this is going. My mind is hungry to just get into this story, you know, but I'm just going to let it go. And no nugget of truth was lost. I didn't miss out on any revelations. And I still have some of that operating now. And it's a very, very sweet, very delicious experience. I guess some people would call it self-acceptance or peacefulness. But for me, it's just non-movement. Like the atmosphere in this room right now. Because something about non-agitation and non-movement allows the essence of who we are to arise from the depth, and along with that comes expansiveness and a gentle, joyous sense of well-being, which is our natural state underneath all of the roiling, all of the movement, all of the striving. Is this natural sense of it's all okay, just as it is. I'm all right. Don't have to do anything. Don't have to be anyone. So can you feel it a little bit? I don't know that I would call it happiness, but I would definitely call it easeful well-being. Neurologists tell us that the place in the brain that we get access to this easeful sense of well-being is the left prefrontal cortex. And I want you to know the good news that long-time meditators have increased flow of energy to that, and really super duper meditators actually have an extra large left prefrontal cortex. So meditation helps, as we can see in an fMRI, data-based, evidence-driven. But the wonderful thing about it is that whenever we take this position, we become our own research project. We don't need somebody else to tell us, because we have the experience immediately and directly, and nothing is more profoundly convincing than an experience that we have. Not told by an authority, not read in a tome, not heard on the radio, television, or movies. The immediate experience of being well as a result of being quiet and still. Who would have ever guessed? Who knew? So I know that at times we think of meditation as hard work, and it can be. It takes dedication, it takes persistence, it takes withstanding discomfort, both mental and emotional and physical at times. But I like to remind myself and all of you also of the easefulness and the joy and the deliciousness and the great opportunity that it gives us to explore being happy. Just being. Nothing else is required of us. No demands. No expectations. No plans. Just breathing and being. So, I welcome any thoughts or comments or questions. Unless we feel so good about just not striving even to ask a brilliant question. Which is perfectly fine. Yes. Doing it right. A very dear friend of mine says there's no way to do it wrong. So the instruction is, you know, it's my training is in Southeast Asian meditation. It's called Vipassana. So the asana is like all the asanas in the yoga series. It's the last asana in the series. And it's called the king's position because it can be held the longest of all the yoga postures. And the vit is related to view, gaining insight. So the thing to do is to have your spine. Really, the only requirement is having your spine be upright but relaxed. So I like to teach people the posture by saying, take a deep breath. And you notice as you take the breath that your rib cage rises and your spine stretches up, and so do your shoulders a little bit. And then on the down breath, drop your shoulders, but leave your spine and your rib cage where they are. That's the position, which is both alert and relaxed at the same time. Should be pretty comfortable for a body that's not too racked. And then pay attention to your breathing. You can do it by the sensation of air going in and out of your nostrils, or the sensation of air filling up your trunk, whether it's in your chest or all the way down to your pelvic floor. Train your attention to follow the breathing. You know, when we are agitated, when things are happening in our lives and we first sit down, our mind does want to go back to what we were thinking about or concerned with, and just gently bringing it back to the sensation of breathing. That's really the only instruction. If you do that, you're doing it right. The reason that people direct attention to sensation level is because of our five senses, the kinesthetic sensation, the visceral and the tactile kinesthetic, is the only sensation that only exists in the present. We can see the past, we can imagine the future, we can hear the past, we can hear stories about the future, but when we're in our body sensations, we cannot be anywhere but in the present. So we have the breathing as a sensation that we're always tethering our attention to, keeping us in the present moment. And of all the five senses, the kinesthetic sense is also the slowest. So it slows us down. And slowing down approaches stopping. And when I say stop, I mean our mind is not frantic anymore. It's focused. Our body is not agitated anymore. It's actually gently softening into the position of being still. Slowing down supports those two functions. So all you need to do is bring your mind back to the sensation of breathing. And that's guaranteed to get you to doing meditation right. Is that clear? Okay. Yes.
I'm just curious if you would speak a little bit about your choice, I guess, with choosing Vipassana as a style, and when you started, if you did a little bit of shopping around, and I don't know.
Shopping around. Yeah. Well, I was in psychology, and I was a radical person in psychology. I liked the idea of, I followed a lot of Reichian, Wilhelm Reich's theories that, you know, we're very, very defended and repressed in society, and that it isn't really healthy for us as natural bodies and minds and beings to go through all that repression. And I thought that it was good for people to be able to, through breathing, to release some of that armoring, some of that defensive structure that defends who we think we're supposed to be, you know, and all the things that might contradict it. So I started out, you know, it was the 70s. Everything was very radical. And I was part of a movement that believed that in an insane, irrational world, it's not rational to be rational. So I thought, you know, be irrational, be insane, you know, break the boundaries, you know, break the borders. And people who are insane are having a natural experience to an insane situation. But I didn't feel that that was going to take me all the way to the freedom that I wanted to experience. So, but I was doing a lot of gestalt, and I was doing some Sufi work, which involved some chanting and some movement and some turning around, and I was doing dyadic work with people. And in that context, the teacher said, okay, now to move further, you need to do a 10-day meditation retreat. And it happened that the person who was teaching it was a Thai master. And I liked Vipassana because it's fundamental to every other practice, spiritual practice that I know. It's really what I call the bone. Everything else is kind of flesh and is corruptible. You know, theories, you know. But it's also the origin of all the other meditation traditions. So in that way, I feel I'm going down to the core, to the baseline. It's too simple to corrupt. For me, corruption was my thing. I did not like people who were abusing their spiritual power or their psychological power or their political power or any of it. I wanted something so basic and so simple that nobody could twist it around. And the way that I describe it, it's too simple to do anything harmful. But I have done Mahayana practices and Vajrayana Tantra practices, but the core is always this for me. But I encourage, you know, go out and explore. See for yourselves. I like to say that, you know, when we involve ourselves in a Buddhist realm, we're involving ourselves in the most democratic realm that exists, because it puts the authority in you and on your experience. Nobody else can tell you what's true. I mean, they can, but what do they know? So it's an anti-authoritarian process of liberation. Too simple to corrupt. Can't get much better than that. Does that?
Yeah.
Yes.
I was working with a client this week, and she was really struggling with power over need. Mm-hmm. And she said, is there a way to be free of that? I said, I don't know of any, but I'm curious what your experience is. There ceasing to desire?
Ceasing to desire, I know. Yeah, well, you know, it is. You can watch yourself. It's kind of like, you know, you can be the dog chasing the bone. Or as a wonderful teacher, Joseph Goldstein, once said, and you watch yourself so much that you get embarrassed and stop. Because it's, you know, when you're driven by desire, it's not a pretty sight. But what's interesting is that I've noticed with my clients lately, because, you know, we are so conditioned to have high decibel experience that we want stuff that goes off the charts, and sex and love and food and all those, you know, sensory things do amplify, especially in the Bay Area, you know, the more the better. And after a while, especially in relationship, you've had that high passionate state that devolves into mutual disrespect and hatred. And the question a lot of my clients have been asking me very, very sadly is, you mean real love doesn't have those highs and lows? We have to kind of like be in this flat zone. And I like to say to people, you know, when you're not blasting a lot of light or sound or passion, then your senses become more attuned to the subtle things. And most of the time, those subtle things are registered, but they're underneath our conscious awareness. And that's really where the depth is. That's where all the fine-tuning is. And that's where all the real experience that really satisfies, like the food that really satisfies, is in that fine-tuned zone that when we're used to high decibel experience, we call flat. But it's not really. It's very profound. It's very subtle. But it takes time for us. It's kind of like being in a room where they turn the lights off. It takes time for our sensory system to adjust to things when they're not so high profile. So I try to tell them, don't believe me. Check it out. But yeah, you know, the thing about being free of desire is just watching yourself, because it is an embarrassing experience. Okay. Yes. No, me.
I don't desire a lot of outside things. What I do desire is that place you talk about.
Yes.
And I
can't desire too passionately, you know. it's Yeah.
I don't want anything except what I have. But I go outside and then you're bombarded.
Yes.
And it's just too overwhelming.
It is overwhelming.
And
it is.
People don't see it overwhelming.
I know. Why don't they change? I know. Listen, there's only one thing worse than enforcing change on ourselves, and it's enforcing change in others. It's like pushing ropes. I say give it up. I know. I was doing a workshop on Sansom Street, Sansom in Montgomery, and we did just very, very brief meditation. And one of the people after the meditation noticed, oh my God, I never realized how incredibly noisy the city is. So, you know, I mean, you know, we're so adaptive. I mean, it's biologically, it's a survival mechanism. We're so adaptive that we don't even notice most of the things that are impinging on us all of the time until we get quiet. And really, that's the liberation, that's the real freedom of getting quiet, is having a choice. Well, you know, I want to wear earplugs, you know, or at least knowing, getting more of a sense of what is coming in at us all of the time. and then being strong so that it doesn't overwhelm us, doesn't completely flatten us out, you know, like a truck driving over us. If we really cultivate the strength of this attention and this well-being, it really does become a pillar of incredible awareness, so that even in the midst of the din of life, we can stay in our own quiet space without pushing it away, but without having it enforce itself on us. That's freedom. That's worth wanting, but not deadly striving for. In the instruction of the practice, one of them is right effort. You know, you want to apply effort, but you don't want it to be driving effort, and you don't want it to be going to sleep. You know, you want something in the middle. The Buddhist realm always encourages us to go towards the middle. We're very polarizing, you know. So we always need to be encouraged, well, let's get into the middle. Let's figure out, let's get our senses primed to be able to experience things that are subtle, not just things that are loud and blaring and in your face, you know. And that's a good message. It's a humanizing message, and it actually makes experience more delicious. The palate of experience is refined that way. Okay, so we just have a few more minutes. Shall we just sit for a little while before we call it an evening? And as always, let us dedicate whatever benefit, whatever merit we have to those close to us, to those not close to us, and to all beings in all the realms, both seen and unseen. Open up and share the benefits of these moments together, moments with ourselves. In gratitude and appreciation. May all beings know the causes and conditions of happiness. May all beings avoid the causes and conditions of misery. And may we and they all know that well-being which is unconditioned and has no cause. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.